With me today, Harriet Walker, accredited sports dietitian. We're going to talk about protein for growth and maintenance, and we're going to focus on BCAAs, EAAs.
Here we go, Greg. This is a pretty fun little topic, so I'm looking forward to diving in.
I like EAAs because I don't have to write as many letters in my life when I'm talking to people.
Welcome to the Body Science Podcast, bringing you everything you need, want, and should know about health, fitness, nutrition, and training. As always, the information contained in this podcast is for the information purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or be prescriptive to treat, prevent, or manage any injury, disease, or other health-related condition. Today's podcast is brought to you by BCEAA Ultra, our new all-in-one BCAA and EAA Elite Amino Formula. This cutting-edge formula provides you with the building blocks for lean muscle gain and helps you work through even the most brutal training session. Not just a BCAA supplement, BCEAA Ultra delivers a full spectrum of essential amino acids in effective doses and is 100% vegan friendly. With a massive 5 grams of BCAAs and 7 grams of EAAs plus added L-glutamine, BCEAA Ultra is your weapon for lean muscle repair and maintenance, helping you recover faster from those punishing workouts.
Okay, it's common knowledge. I'm here with Harriet Walker, dietitian. That's not common knowledge. No one knew that until I told you, but it's common knowledge that protein requirements are slightly higher in people who are active. And that's brought on this trend of BCAAs, which has led into EAAs. Back in the old days, it used to be half a serve of protein before you trained, and you know, serve of protein within the anabolic window after. That's been turned upside down. That's been challenged by 1,000 people. That's everywhere. Then when the intra came into play, intra workout was massive. That's been turned upside down.
And there was the anabolic window.
I love the anabolic window. I still think you're wrong. I'm an anabolic window fan.
I've jammed my fingers in that window.
Yeah, I know. You go to any elite sporting team, they've got anabolic windows going everywhere. And you can talk about what that is, because someone who doesn't understand what that is would think we're talking about drugs. We're not.
We're not.
The BCAAs came into play. The whole intra-workout category got big. That's been turned upside down. I think I'm repeating myself, Harriet. Like, feel free to tell me to jog on, Greg. And now everyone's talking EAAs. The new BCAAs are EAAs. And so there's a whole lot of confusion.
EAA.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of confusion in the marketplace as to what's better for me, BCAAs or EAAs.
Oh, it's a debate. It's hot. If you go to any bodybuilding gym, it will be a big discussion about EAAs, BCAAs, protein, egg whites.
Yep.
I don't know. It's rife. What we need to take a step back and look at is, what is protein made of? Protein is made of amino acids. So that's where we get the EAA, amino acids, BC.
Assuming it's not made of chocolate cake and double chocolate cake and ice cream and cookie dough and raspberry.
Ripple.
Like, no. It's not made of those?
Protein is not made of raspberry ripple. Sorry.
Okay.
Boring.
Okay.
No. So protein is made up of these building blocks called amino acids. I think I've described this before to many people, as amino acids are kind of like the letters of the alphabet. So we've got 26 letters in the alphabet. They make up lots and lots of different kinds of words. In the same way, we have 21 amino acids, which make up lots and lots of different types of protein. So our hair is a different kind of protein, skin, nails, muscle, hormones are all made of different combinations and lengths of proteins, you know, with the building block of amino acids. So you get a chain of amino acids and then they fold up on each other. You get this little ball of, I think I described it last time as like you get a necklace, you wrap it up, you scrunch it up, and that's kind of like what a protein looks like. So it's just a ball of individual amino acids. So there's 21 of those. When we're looking at food composition, we want to make sure that we are consuming all of the amino acids in our food. So,
and that's where you plant people, mix two plants together, bang.
Well, that's what it comes down to, is there are some amino acids that our body can produce by itself.
Yep.
We call these non-essential amino acids. It's not essential that we eat them.
Arlene, arginine, no, anyway.
You've got that book in front of you.
Yeah, I do.
Cheating.
What book?
Yeah, they are the non-essential ones. So our body can produce those themselves.
Does it produce therapeutic levels?
It's just enough for...
So when you say enough, like, our body produces creatine,
yes,
as we know.
Yep, about 1 gram a day.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you look at most supplement companies are saying take 3 as a maintenance dose. Is that the same thing with these non-essential amino acids?
Look, what it comes down to is...
When you say non-essential, you're talking life, aren't you?
Yeah.
Alive or dead.
Look, we're talking about enough
moving towards
to get
death.
By... Yeah. Like, without dying,
yeah.
You know, as essential for like conducive to life.
Yes.
What we need to look at here is there's recommendations for general population, and then there's recommendations for people who are active because they're doing more damage to their body through training, not damage, but they're asking more of their body, they're pushing their...
Oh, people are hitting the pavement hard these days. Like, it's a different type of... The fitness industry's grown.
If you think about your body as a system, when you train, you're pushing your body away from its home homeostasis. So we talked about homeostasis. There's that word. You brought it in good.
Dietitian's back in the house.
Whoop, whoop. Yeah. And the further we push our body away from homeostasis, the more sort of disruption is being caused, which means the more repair that needs to be done by the body to bring it back to the baseline. And that's always what our body is trying to do. Baseline, homeostasis, we're trying to achieve that. So it was the case of creatine. Yes, we get creatine from our diet, but that doesn't mean that at any one stage our muscle creatine levels are saturated. But generally, they're like 60% saturated at any one time because we don't need to have our muscles saturated because I'm not doing a 100-meter sprint every day. So it's not physiologically required for me to have fully saturated creatine levels in my blood to get to work on the week, like during the week.
And are you talking about a sedentary person or you as in the lifestyle you're living?
As a sedentary person.
No, in what you were just talking about, your hypothesis then was based on average Joe.
Average Joe compensation in terms of creatine levels. And then it's the same thing with protein. So you look at the general pop recommendations for protein and it's 0.8 per kilo body weight.
Yep.
And I was thinking of grams per day versus
that's a 65 kilo woman and a 75 kilo male, just for those who want to know.
Reference point. So we're looking at 0.8 kilos per kilo of body weight as general pop. And that assumes that this person isn't doing anything to disrupt their equilibrium. They're not doing anything that's going to make them need to really rapidly recover. And if they do something that might require some mending in the body, they've got more than 24 hours to do it. Yeah. It's not time critical.
Yep.
So the reason why protein supplementation has become so well researched and of great interest is because we realize when people are training that because they're pushing their bodies to much further extremes than we've ever really experienced before, what we're seeing is, you know, they might have less than 12 hours to recover. And because of that, you know, this is when supplementation can be really useful in terms of getting their body back to, you know, normal equilibrium faster. Or it might be the damage that they've done is a lot more prolific than what we're used to. So providing larger doses is assisting, taking advantage of the training, because we're training for a purpose. The purpose is generally to get fitter, faster, stronger. Eating a normal diet will probably get you most of the way. But if we want to optimize, we're not just talking about general population when we're talking sport. We're talking about optimization, one percenters. That's when supplementation can really help. So essential amino acids are the 9 amino acids that our body cannot produce. We have to consume
And essential amino acids, for those of you who are trying to work out means, that's EAA.
EAA. So, and then, so we've got the 9 that our body cannot produce. And within that bracket of 9 essential amino acids, we go one layer down and we have what we call BCAA, so branched chain amino acids.
So they make up part of the EAAs.
They are a component of the EAAs. They are 3 of the 9 amino acids.
So why do you think the sports industry went down the BCAA track so quickly? I mean, I know from my point of view, sourcing, getting the right ingredients, like the availability of these things.
Yep.
Why do you think, like, EAAs are very on trend in sports nutrition at the moment?
They are so hot right now.
Yeah. So, but it's been BCAAs for, ooh,
it's
3 years?
I reckon it's been a big bodybuilding thing because we know that, I mean.
And don't we love the fact that bodybuilding pushes this industry? I dig it.
Look, I think it's.
Well, you guys tow it back.
It's funny because, push it forward. You know, I do evidence-based practice.
Yeah, well, that's good.
That said, there's a lot of things that bodybuilders were doing before they knew why it worked.
Exactly.
They were doing it, they knew it worked, but that doesn't mean, it's not a bad thing they didn't know why it worked.
Yeah.
They just knew it worked. Now we have the benefit of better science and interest in the topic. So now we're actually figuring out
why it works. And better
communication
where the world can read these
Absolutely.
Things,
yeah. So it doesn't really matter that they didn't know why it worked. It just worked.
Mm.
So, you know, the burden of proof wasn't necessarily there, but what it has given us as, you know, the scientific community is, you know, pathways to go down to investigate, okay, what's the mechanism behind that? Because it's actually really interesting. So I really appreciate, you know, where we've come from in terms of sports nutrition and sports supplementation. We wouldn't have been anywhere near where we are right now unless we had these people experimenting. And it's important to understand, like, with evidence-based practice, yes, it's scientifically based. So we want to see some understanding around the mechanisms, but it's also based on the practitioner's experience and also the person sitting in front of them.
Yeah,
so
cool.
It's not just about scientific papers. So when getting back on topic, the branched chain amino acids are 3, the isoleucine, leucine and valine. Now, leucine specifically is important in terms of the triggering of muscle synthesis in the body.
It's a pretty cool amino.
It's a pretty cool amino acid.
One of the expensive ones too, kids. So if you're looking at what's in a formula.
Yep, it's expensive. Mm. Gains are expensive, bro.
Yeah.
I'm hip. I'm cool.
I like it. Thanks, Auntie Harriet.
No, I'm doing the Macarena for anyone who is listening. But basically, we know that leucine is a really important amino acid for triggering of muscle synthesis via the mTOR pathway. However, so you want to make sure that when you're taking a protein supplement or you're just looking at protein, that you are consuming enough leucine in your supplement, because that's actually a really super important part.
So can I just ask you a dumb question? If I've got a BCAA with a good level of leucine in it versus an EAA that's got, you know, a good level but not as high, which one are you taking home?
Oh, good question. I would probably still go the EAA.
Okay.
Because there's a pathway to where we have come today in terms of protein supplementation. I think what happens when people realize, oh, leucine's really good for you, let's isolate that and just have that. Or branched chains are really good for muscle synthesis. They're the, you know, really in high proportions in muscle protein. So let's just have those three happy days. And there was initially research to show that, okay, probably some supplementation with branched chain amino acids might have assisted with reduced fatigue. So there is some research that says that taking a branched chain amino acid might help spare glycogen, muscle glycogen, and therefore it might be a supplement that somebody might take who's doing endurance sport. So there is some research that is out there that says that, yes, they're doing stuff. But as we step back and back and back with research, we're also seeing that single nutrient research is really useful for figuring out mechanisms. But we also want to see how food and supplements work in the system and as a whole. And I think stepping back and taking in, it's not just leucine that's important. It's the essential amino acids as a team. There's no iron team and there's no leucine in. I actually don't know where I'm going with that analogy, but
it was going to be wrong.
It was going to be wrong. Basically, leucine alone.
She's had a few Red Bulls today. Go easy on her.
I've got a bit of a cold.
She's feeling crook and I'm filling her up with Red Bull.
Ding, ding, ding. But basically, you know, leucine is important. Branched chain amino acids are important. Essential amino acids are essential. All of the amino acids are required in the body. So we can...
Let me throw this out. I'm a 26-year-old guy training in the gym 5-6 times a week. The gym has told me, like the gym...
Bro?
Hi. I'm not going to say bro because, you know, could have been someone smart there that was in the gym, exercise physiologist. Has said get on some branched chains or some EAAs.
Yep.
Because, you know, that used to be get on whey. Now it's get on. So phone call comes through the office. Should I take BCAAs or EAAs?
I answered this question.
But I'm talking about the 25-year-old male training 5-6 times a week.
So first things first is I'm going to ask a few more questions. And you're just going to nod at me right now.
Yeah.
So it's important to understand that we can get...
Warning, disclaimer.
Boring alert. Boring alert.
Wish I had a honker. I'd be honking shit right now. Seriously.
Science is cool, Greg. Let me go.
I know. Okay.
So, okay, we can get essential amino acids from food. We can get branched chain amino acids from food. Yeah. Dairy is rich in essential amino acids.
Not the first dietitian to say that.
Boring. But anyway, so taking a step back, we need to look at the person's, what are they trying to achieve? So there is scenarios where I may use a branched chain or an essential amino acid in certain scenarios where I look, it's probably where a person is trying to drop some body fat. They're on reduced calories and they want to maintain their lean muscle mass. I explain.
So you're going to go EAAs in that scenario, aren't you?
I think essential amino acids are really useful.
So now I'm a 26-year-old. That took a long time, Harriet, for a yes, no answer.
I'm not a yes, no kind of gal.
Now I'm a 26-year-old male or female triathlete and I'm doing heavy workload. I'm talking heavy, like I'm all three disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
So where am I at? Am I picking a BCAA or an EAA?
Well, you could go either. Once again, I'd probably go the EAA purely for the fact that, you know, some is good, more is better. If I'm going to take a supplement.
That's the supplements industry's theory. I didn't think it was dietitians, but that's fine.
And when it comes to amino acids.
I do like it though. I do like it.
We want to have all the essential ones there, keeping in mind that an essential amino, it's got all nine there and they're all involved in the process of recovery.
Wouldn't I be getting those from my food, Harriet? Like I'm just talking about supplements now.
Well, if you.
Sorry. Sorry, I was just taking the piss.
I'm just going to go home now, guys.
So, okay, that's a good story. So we've talked about the bodybuilder type person, the functional trainer. We've talked about the endurance athlete. What about the tradie that's sweating all day long, lifting 8 hours a day, working hard, and then going to the gym? So those guys are renowned for sipping on a BCAA or an EAA during the day. Which one should they take?
Man, I'm going to go the EAA. Do you know why, though?
No, I think safe bet. Is that why?
No, I just think it's all of the components that were required.
Yeah, it makes sense. And that's all I want to get across to people. It's everything.
Yeah. So if I explain it to people that, okay, a protein powder has got a really good amino acid profile. It contains all the amino acids. And an EAA or a branched chain amino acid are like the skeleton. Like they're the bare minimum, the bare bones of what you need in order to recover, in order to repair lean muscle mass. If you're on a tight energy budget, those things can really help. And
Okay, tight energy budget, what do you mean?
If you're trying to cut calories, you're trying to get shredded, you're trying to lean down, so I was going to go weight
loss
fat. Next,
but so you drop weight loss in there now?
Yeah, those sorts of...
What do you think about people sipping on them all day? You know, the big 2-litre tank? It's good to get their water up. Hydration's great.
If they've got enough money to hydrate that way, awesome.
If they've got enough money to hydrate that way, it's nice. Okay, well, let's... you're not giving me the answers I want.
No, I just think it has to be in the dose. So I think it's the all at once sort of scenario, which is important as well, getting that leucine around the training time. I feel like if you're sipping on it across the day, it probably tastes good. You're getting your amino acids in.
Yeah, everyone's carb-phobic.
But also, we need to keep in mind... You want that dose all at once, you know what I mean? We have to have that concentration there.
Yep, okay. So speaking of concentration and dosing all at once, let's talk about the kidneys and nitrogen. Like, are we putting more stress on our kidneys by having BCAAs versus EAAs?
Look, I think at this stage in the game, the whole stress, unless you have a diagnosed kidney disease, protein taxation on the kidneys, excretion on, look, it's kind of been disproven that taking protein powder puts any extra stress.
Yep.
Doesn't mean to say we need to be having like when I'm looking at dosing for somebody who's either trying to cut weight or who's really active, I might have them on to upwards, maybe 2.5 grams per kilo of body weight for protein. If they're really trying to drop some weight, it can be really hard to get that amount of protein in. Protein helps with muscle sparing, but also protein is highly satiating, and they've got the thermic effect of protein. So protein costs more energy for your body to utilize it as energy. It needs to go through the process of gluconeogenesis in order for it to be used. And so using protein can help give you a little bit of a metabolic upkick as well. There's times when you're an athlete, you might be competing on a competition day and your appetite is on the floor. This is a time where protein for recovery, especially if it's a multiple day event, if appetite is low, the person doesn't really want to take in any food. This is when like a branched chain or an essential amino acid supplement is useful, because it's giving them the essential amino acids that they require.
So say we're running a pro surfer on a surfing event, got through the first round, and now we're in the quarterfinals and the semifinals into the finals, and there might be half an hour between the last two or three hours before the one before.
Maximal exertion.
Yeah. Are we taking an EAA or a BCAA?
I'm going to go EAA again.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important to throw these scenarios out, because there's a lot of people asking these questions.
They're valid. They're really valid questions, because it is confusing.
Okay.
You can take one or the other, but I'm like...
What if I'm a breastfeeding mother? Which one should I take?
You should eat some food, Greg.
That's a great answer. See, it's not all about EAAs. I was just making sure that it wasn't.
It's not about EAAs.
Let's get back on track and back in your lane.
The use for the supplement is as a supplement, but they are handy when your appetite is low. And I've experienced this myself multiple times. I've competed a lot of different sports. If you've got multi-day events or events where...
Like you're a strong person, that's multi-day all day long, isn't it?
You've got 5 events across a day,
yeah, exactly.
And you do not feel like eating. You forget to eat.
You can't eat it, drink
your appetite's suppressed. I will use supplementation there, because I need to get my nutrition in. And I did a CrossFit competition last weekend, multiple day event, so I had to try and recover. I had 3 events one day, 3 events the next day. An essential amino acid supplement for me then was really useful, because I was getting my protein intake when I didn't really feel like it. It was helping me hydrate, and then when I could get to my next meal, I had that.
So speaking about you and your strong person competition day. So your EAAs, like the way I use them personally when I'm, you know, running and training and doing, and I'm 50, so we're not killing ourselves, guys, but I'm a little bit of water, shoot it down, get it in type guy.
Yep.
Okay, that's me.
Yep.
What are you doing? How much water are you putting it in?
I'm probably having it as a drink. Like I'm drinking it like
so it's
water.
Part of your hydration strategy.
And another part of it is because they're sweet. I mean, we also know that having anything sweet in your mouth helps reduce the perception of fatigue as well. You'll see a lot of fighters taking branched chain amino acids.
Yeah.
We've got that mixed, you know, sweetness hydration factor. And I think that's probably a lot of the reason why they're really popular in that population. They're trying to cut weight.
Yeah.
So they're on a very tight energy budget.
So that's a treat as well.
They're high intensity and it helps them get the water down. So,
So should we consume BCAAs or EAAs before we train?
When we're looking at protein intake in general, we want to make sure that A, we're getting enough total across the day.
Yep.
Then we need to look at protein distribution. We look at it as, okay, just think about having an amino acid bucket. I want to make sure that like that bucket might be sort of starting to fall below full every 3 or 4 hours. I just want to make sure
that
here's
my bucket. Here's my bucket.
Yep.
I've got up at 6 o'clock. I've had a meat pie and a chocolate milk on the way to my work site. I've gone to work. The smoko van I missed because my boss is an asshole. I've worked through. It's 4 o'clock. I've got to go to the gym and meet the boys. What am I taking a... And I can't eat because I'm a busy dude.
You just want to drink your calories.
Well, I want life to be simple at this point and I'll make a beautiful calorie macro meal later on for
I'd
you,
have a
okay?
good protein shake.
You'd have a protein shake before you have the EAAs?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if EAAs have got all the aminos, why would you have a protein shake?
I mean, it's a full amino acid profile in a whey protein. We know...
The levels are higher too, I suppose.
Sorry?
The levels will be higher too.
The levels?
Of the individual aminos.
Yeah. And look, it's at the end of the day, whey protein is a food derivative, a little bit more satisfying. But I mean, if someone doesn't want to drink a milky drink, they may prefer an EAA.
Yeah.
And that's personal preference.
Back in the old days when we used to talk sports nutrition until the world's been shaken up by a few people, we actually used to put a half serve of protein and some carbs before we trained.
Yeah, cool.
Now, tell me, are EAAs and BCAAs better utilized by the body when they've got a carbohydrate transporter?
Well, when we look at the way in which it gets into the cell, we know like post-training, definitely, we've got this hormonal environment whereby your body is more readily uptaking products into the cell with carbohydrate via insulin transportation. We've got a mechanical way in which protein can get into the cell minus insulin. Mm-hmm. And then we've got insulin transportation of nutrients into the cell as well. So I'm always going to say if you're trying to take something for recovery, I would say that the same thing goes for getting it in before training too. It's going to happen a little bit better in the presence of some carbohydrate. And on the flip side of that, when we're looking at muscle glycogen replenishment, so post-training recovery, we know that if carbohydrate levels aren't high enough, the addition of protein can actually help a glucose glycogen replenishment as well. So they kind of go hand in hand quite nicely there.
So the next big question, should I consume them during my training? And let's just say, let's use something about F45, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm doing an F45 session. I'm seeing a dietitian, so I'm already eating a nice, balanced, well-controlled meal over the day. But now I'm going to go blow myself out for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I've got my drink bottle ready. And obviously it's trendy to walk in with a coloured drink bottle.
Yeah.
That aside.
Shaker.
Where's our intra workout at?
45 minutes. The chances of you dipping into your muscle glycogen stores beyond 50% is probably not going to happen. If you were an Olympic sprinter, I might say that you might have a chance.
Let's go back to F45.
F45, look, you're not going to be maxing out your muscle glycogen at this stage. So,
and what does maxing out my muscle glycogen mean for those people that are doing F45 going, shit, I just bought an EA drink and I've wasted my money?
When it comes to performance outputs, one of the the limiting factor is how much energy you can provide to your muscles to do the work. Muscle glycogen is our energy store that, you know, is used. The energy is used by our muscles to do the work. Once you run out of energy to use, performance bombs. So the reason why we might use intra nutrition to increase the time to fatigue. So we want to elongate, make you go longer. Yep. Harder, faster, for longer. If you've had protein, so that's carbohydrate focused. From a protein perspective, if you've had some protein before training and you plan to have a meal within 2 hours after training, chances are having an any kind of supplement during your session is probably surplus to need.
And that's probably why people are using AAAs and stuff, because, you know, F45 sessions start at 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yep,
or they start at 5, 6, 7 after work, where...
If they want to get a jump start, if they've done an overnight, they're probably...
had lunch at 12:30.
They haven't had... Yeah, look, it might be something that somebody chooses to use to get a jump start on their recovery.
Yep.
And that would be a personal preference. So, you know, morning training might be something where that person might decide, and a supplement might be something that's useful for them if they're busy and they're not sort of paying attention to, or they're not able to get to food before the next meal, sort of thing.
So a lot of things that come over the counter is at customer service here is, I've had my EAAs during sport, will it reduce my protein breakdown and reduce my muscle damage later because I've drunk it? It's there. It's in my guts. It's doing what the gut does.
Look, if you've consumed enough protein and your amino acid levels in your body are elevated, that is going to help with muscle recovery. So in essence, that's not a completely silly question. Yep. That's a pretty, you know, basic understanding of the way in which having regular doses
of
protein across the day.
Before you train?
I don't do it during.
No.
I would use them, like I said, I use them on competition days when I just don't eat food. Yep. Like, I just don't feel like, I want to keep my stomach empty. I want to stay hydrated. I'm trying to get ahead of recovery for the next day. That's when I'm using supplements, because that's just what I've found works for me.
Yeah. And that, obviously, when you talk to a lot of athletes, they train multiple times a day too. And
yeah, absolutely. And when there's less than sort of 12 hours between sessions, it is really useful. And like I said, the appetite thing is a big one, because you're like, oh, I actually don't feel like eating for an hour after doing a HIIT session. If I do a 98 Riley Street session, I do not feel like eating, because I've maxed out my body that hard that I'm like, oh, I couldn't think of food right now. And that's the nature of high intensity exercise. Long distance stuff is a little bit different. It's an interesting pathway we've taken in terms of sports nutrition. From we know protein is good for muscle, and then we've come down, you know, down to more finer details to where we are now. We know why some things work. Yeah. So it's just an interesting evolution of understanding, I suppose.
Okay. So active people will need a little bit more amino acid in their life than non-active people?
Yeah. When it comes down to, like I said before, because of the greater amounts of damage, the further away from equilibrium they're getting every time they do a training session, having extra protein intake will just make sure that recovery can happen effectively. And it's the same with your senior athletes as well, because as we age, we do get a reduction in lean muscle mass. It's harder to put on lean muscle mass. So using protein supplementation in that population where appetite might also be a little bit lower is actually really useful as well.
So say I'm a intermittent faster now.
Ah.
And we get these are all questions that come over the customer service counter. I'm doing intermittent fasting. Obviously, I'm not a true traditionalist, so let's let them do their thing. They're going to do what they do. So I'm having a BCAA or an EAA during the day because it's got no sugar. It doesn't have a hell of a lot of calories in it. You're talking a 10-gram serve. So good idea or bad idea? I mean, you're not into the belief system of everyone should do intermittent fasting. I get that.
Look,
I know each of their own, and
appreciate the practice for those who enjoy it.
So a lot of people who are, and these people, I'm probably talking about ones who are looking for calorie restriction because they're using the 16-8.
So they're keto hacking. Not keto hacking, they're intermittent fasting hacking.
Yeah. So
they basically, the goal is here that they're intermittent fasting, so they're reducing their calorie intake to a certain window. They're probably not doing true intermittent fasting because...
No, that's cool. I get that.
Yeah, I'm just summarizing.
They're probably trained in the morning.
Might have trained in the morning, and so they might be looking at using an essential amino acid, branched-chain amino acid.
Are you going to get a better benefit from using those at that time in that state than somebody who's using them who's not?
Who's not? I would dare say yes. Like, if you have decided that intermittent fasting is what you want to do and you're training in the morning during your fast, we're going to be getting better recovery using an essential amino acid than not, because we're taking advantage of that initial recovery period post-training where the muscles are ready and willing to take on substrates for recovery.
Oh, what can I work on with you next that might throw you a little left ball here and there? Do you think you'll see the next generation of EAAs have carbs with them?
I would think that would be a really cool thing for them to do. We have come from a bit of a carb phobic.
There's not carbs in many foods anymore, any subs anymore.
It's hard
to come by carbs, actually. Mm. Like, they're really, you really have to look for carbs.
Yeah.
I don't have to look for carbs. But look, that's the thing. Like, I'm not a high carb kind of person. I don't do the sorts of sports. I actually don't work with many athletes who do the kind of sports that require those, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 grams per kilo body weight carbs. Like, that's high carb. Mm. I think it would be useful in terms of making a recovery supplement to have carbohydrates in them. I just think any recovery plan that doesn't have carbohydrates in them is probably, you're probably shortchanging yourself.
Yep.
So if there was a next gen of supplements, I think it would be useful. But some people like to choose their carbohydrates from different sources, so it depends.
So people, EAA sound like they're the go now versus BCAAs?
Me personally, I think in terms of use and practicality,
yep.
If I had to choose, I'm always going to go an EAA.
Okay.
I really like them as a supplement when I've got somebody, like I said, on a tight energy budget, low calorie, trying to drop some weight, still wanting to get that recovery, trying to maintain lean muscle mass, or where appetite is low, we still need to recover, we still need to get that protein intake, but they don't really feel like eating food, and they have the means to get supplements, happy days. That's when I think they're really useful.
Well, Harriet, thanks for that. That was a good one.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There's a really good article by Harriet on our website under articles in the top, bodyscience.com.au.
Correct.
And it explains the difference between BCAAs and EAAs, and it is referenced, so it's the real deal.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to the next one.
Thanks for helping people, Harriet. You're a good person.
Thanks, man.
Today's podcast was brought to you by our partners in Fit, Happy and Healthy, ASN, Nutrition Warehouse, DY Discount Vitamins, Fat Burners Only, Evelyn Fay, Mr. Supplement, or find a retailer online at bodyscience.com.au/retailers.